Okay, thank you. As Gerald said, my name is Sally Lacey. I work for the CDC, and I'm stationed at the Richmond City Health District working in chronic disease prevention. I'm joined by my colleague, Mike Royster, who is the Vice President of the Institute for Public Health Innovation, a public health institute that serves Maryland, Virginia, and Washington, D.C. So just a little overview of what we'll be talking about today. I'll be starting with giving a very brief background to the city of Richmond, including an overview of health equity in the city and a review of the factors that led to that current state of health equity, just to give you a background of why we chose to utilize health in all policies in Richmond. We'll be following that with an introduction to the work that we're doing in health in all policies, including, again, how we made that decision that health in all policies would be a relevant approach to addressing the need to improve health equity in our city, how we went about forming the Health and All Policies team in Richmond, gaining support of stakeholders, and developing a plan of action to move forward. And I'll just be reviewing some challenges, successes, and lessons learned, as well as our next steps. So to get started, I unfortunately have to move rather quickly through some of the background slides, but suffice it to say that Richmond is a great city. We have a couple large universities. We have the beautiful James River and all the park grounds surrounding it, a very lively music and art scene, and we've been getting different national, international attention over the last few years. But at the same time, we are also a city that is very much defined and influenced by our history. Richmond served as the capital of the Confederacy during the Civil War from 1861 to 1865. And the city remains decorated today by monuments to Confederate leaders, as well as historical sites like the one seen here, the Lumpkin Slave Jail. So we also are home to some very active Confederate advocacy groups, like the one seen here, who stations themselves outside of the Virginia Fine Arts Museum every Saturday. And all that to say that in the wake of the larger national movement that is happening in our country to acknowledge and confront issues of race over the last year, these monuments to the Confederacy have become symbols of contention in the city, and more than one have been spray-painted by the message you see here, Black Lives Matter. Okay, so taking a look at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation County Health Rankings, for Richmond City, which is also its own county, you can see that we are also a city that is very much defined by socioeconomic inequality. So in 2014, we ranked 121 out of 133 Virginia counties in terms of our overall health outcomes. That ranking rose to 113 in 2015. Along the social and economic factors influencing health, which are defined here as education, employment, income, family and social support, and community safety, our ranking rose from 129 out of 133 in 2014 to 128. So what that is telling us is that we need to look at what the socioeconomic factors are that are clearly holding significant negative influence over the health of Richmond residents and are limiting our ability as a city to achieve significant improvements in overall health. So to do that, one domain to start analyzing structural inequality is housing. So in 1934, the Federal Housing Administration established the Homeowners Loan Corporation, or HULC. The role of HULC was to rate all neighborhoods in the city on a scale from A to D, according to how comfortable mortgage lenders should feel in providing loans to residents living there. And so this marked the beginning of what some people call mortgage redlining. Race played a significant role in defining the HULC rankings. For example, in level C, you can see that it's defining neighborhoods that are marked by the threat of foreign-born, Negro, or lower-grade populations. So what this left us with is basically the highest-rated neighborhoods in green are on the west side of the city, circled in blue, and the lowest-rated neighborhoods, the D neighborhoods, are in red on the east side of the city, both north and south of the river. And if you look at this graphic, it's showing us the same thing, except that it's filled in the neighborhoods with green dots for white residents living in those neighborhoods as of 1950 and purple dots for black residents living in these neighborhoods as of 1950. So what that shows you is that we have pretty much exclusively white, wealthier residents living on the west side of the city and majority black, lower income residents living on the east side of the city. So a few years later, the federal government established permanent public housing built mainly in these D-rated neighborhoods. The income requirements attached to the public housing developments ensure that only low-income residents could move in and stay there, pretty much ensuring the ongoing concentration of poverty in these neighborhoods. And so if you compare a map from 1937 to the Hulk designations to concentrated poverty in 2012, you see that there's quite literally a reflection between these two maps, in that decisions made in the policy sector regarding housing over 75 years ago, which we saw were motivated by racial attitudes and other economic factors, they are reflected in the geographic socioeconomic inequity in our city today. This shows up in life expectancy. Here we can see that, again, on the west side of the city, we have life expectancy going up to 83 years, and on the east side, as low as 60 years. So about a distance of about 5 miles means about an average difference in 20 years one can be expected to live. Again, looking at education, if we look at percentage of residents who fail to graduate high school, we have almost close to 0% on the west side of the city and up to 61% on the east side of the city, circled in red. It's the same situation for the percentage of the population living below the poverty line, and exactly the same, again, for the percentage of households with no personal vehicle, affecting residents' ability, as we know, to access healthy food, job opportunities, education, etc. So, on that note, we were aware, knowing that inequity that, again, is plaguing the health of Richmond residents today was partially born out of decisions made in the policy realm that, and these weren't just made in the health sector, they were made in different sectors like the housing sector, that we were going to need to address these determinants by looking at policy. And so we chose a health and all policy approach. You can see here through some quotes outlined by the WHO and the APHA that health and all policies is an initiative that is designed to address the underlying factors, the underlying social determinants of health. I'm going to bring Mike up here to give some more background on how we began this process in Richmond.
Good afternoon. I'll briefly go through some of the background related to the current Health and All Policies Initiative that we've been working on to address this historic inequity in the city. It really began back in 2010 and 2011 when the incoming mayor developed a Blue Ribbon Health Policy Commission and engaged leaders from around the community to be involved and to identify recommendations. I was at the time with the State Health Department and served on that commission, chairing the Health and Social Equity Group. And we came up with recommendations generally that promoted integrating health and social equity considerations into all of local governmental decision making, as well as developing an interdepartmental team that could institutionalize that work across city decisions going forward. There was some turnover in city leadership over the next year or so, but during that time, as I transitioned to the IPHI, we continued to have some exploratory conversations around health and all policies, but again, because of the changeover in leadership, that did not move forward until January of 2014, when the Deputy Health Director and I had conversations about an announcement for the National Leadership Academy for the Public's Health, and decided that it would be a great opportunity for us to explore moving forward the Health and All Policies Initiative within the city as a part of that academy. And so we applied and formed a team, which I'll talk about briefly, and we're fortunate enough to have a coach during that year, Mark Horton, who's in the audience now, who had been the State Health Commissioner in California during the time that they established their Health and All Policies Initiative at the state governmental level. And so it was really informative to our work. And during that time, really for the next year, we moved forward the effort to engage the local leadership, met numerous times with the city council members individually, as well as presented to their health and education committee and to the full city council, presented to the school board as well and to other leaders in the community, and eventually led to the passage of a health and all policies resolution and policy for the city, which I'll talk about a little bit more as we move forward. The team that we put together for the health and all policies work was really a core group of leaders within the city that included the Richmond City Health Department, which is actually a part of the state health agency in Virginia, but works very closely with the local government, and the deputy director has really developed strong relationships, which were really valuable in this process. We also engaged a member of the school board who was new to the school board and very committed to the education of all the children in the city, and really saw a link between this health and all policies work and her interest and commitment. We also engaged the city administration through the Office of Health and Human Services as kind of the city lead in this effort, and they were very involved throughout and continue to be involved. The mayor also has, since coming into office, created a anti-poverty commission with the goal of dramatically reducing poverty in the city. And so as we began our work, clearly we recognized the strong links between that work and what we were proposing around health and all policies, and so we engaged them. And then IPHI, again a public health institute, served a role both as a part of the team in moving the effort forward, as well as helping to identify best practices that we could draw on to move our initiative within the city. We really wanted to focus on connecting health and all policies to other priorities in the city. The concept of health was already important to city leaders, and at the same time, there were other priorities that we recognized that if we connected to could really strengthen our work. The city was in the process of finalizing its strategic plan, and we felt like if we could integrate health and all policies into that, that would create a nice mechanism to continue the work. And so as we talked about health, we also connected it to the idea of quality of life, which the city recognized through its strategic plan and creating a Tier 1 city. I mentioned the Anti-Poverty Commission and the Blue Ribbon Health Policy Commission as well, out of which arose the Healthy Richmond campaign, which we worked with in addition. In terms of the values that we connected to, the city clearly had a strong interest in equity through the Anti-Poverty Commission, as well as through the strategic plan. There was a strong emphasis on efficiency in terms of some of the language from the strategic plan was related to ensuring that the city would make the best use of limited resources to deliver value to customers and stakeholders. And that's really one of the key components of health and all policies around creating efficiency, working across sectors so as to reduce duplication and improve outcomes overall. Briefly, we were able to pass a local ordinance, which I can talk about a little bit more maybe during the question and answer period, but it was based on an ordinance that came out of King County, Washington, who's really been a leader in this work. We also looked at the work at the state of California level and at Richmond City, California, which is another city that has done a tremendous work in local government health and all policies. Our ordinance was actually downgraded by the city attorney to a resolution and a policy statement, but I think that's a good first step for us. In particular, the policy statement included a focus on fair and just principles, including equity and opportunity, health equity impact tools so that city government could have processes to follow to help think about health and social equity, as well as guidelines for community engagement, developing work plans, and an annual report. And so we're currently at the phase of implementation, which will involve a two-day workshop, which will be developed for city leadership. And I think as we're running out of time, I don't know if you wanted to add anything briefly, Sally, or?
We'd be happy to talk later one-on-one. We have some more slides and more information to share on how we've integrated ourselves into the city's strategic plan and to the seven work groups that were formed through that strategic plan. And so we'd be happy to share how we are going forward with that process. I think it's going to be the major way we become implicated into the day-to-day work of the Richmond City government, as well as the two-day workshop that we're holding for city leadership. I think that is something that will really define the momentum that this movement has going forward. So we're happy to share more information on that later, as well as our challenges and lessons learned.
So this is time for questions and answers, but one thing I seem to get from yours is that in your work with them, health in all policies as a concept was not something that had much pushback.
They had resistance to, yeah. What you mean? No, so in response to the question that you posed in the beginning, is the word health and health in all policies an attraction or distraction for people who don't work in health? I think it depends on the context, and in the context of Richmond, we already had a few initiatives in place under city leadership, under the mayor specifically, that were highlighting the need to improve the health of all Richmond residents, and that was tied into this overall desire to make Richmond a tier one city that was going to attract commercial and residential investment in a way that it hasn't in a long time. And so, no, I think that we introduced this concept at a good time. We had a very receptive audience in city government. It doesn't mean that they're still looking to us for answers on exactly what this means and exactly what they need to do. And we haven't necessarily gone through all those steps yet to see if this is something that they'll really take on their own moving forward without us being the ones to push the process along the entire time.
Okay,
I do think they're very receptive.
Do you have any brief questions, Sylvia?
My question. Ordinance.
Mm-hmm. To resolution and policy. I think the city attorney recommendation said that from his standpoint that it wasn't at this point appropriate for it to be an ordinance, which we kind of had some disagreement about. But I think in the long run it's challenging that it's not legally binding unless it's an ordinance. In either way, I think there still needs to be a consistent implementation to assure that it does move forward. But it does make it a little more challenging. But again, the other side too is that Richmond City has been supportive for the most part, and there is interest in moving forward. So I think there is possibility of still moving things forward effectively through the partnerships that we've created and continue to merge.
Thank you very much. For first, quick question. Go you. I'm sorry.
If you've got enough time, I'd be curious to know what sort of elements you had in the policy and what you were trying to put in place. Mm-hmm. Just if you can summarize it.
Yeah,
go ahead. You can do it quickly?
Yeah. What sort of elements were in the policy itself? What were being threatened?
Yeah. So the policy was framed around what's called fair and just principles as being guiding. For the work that would really focus on equity and opportunity across all populations in the city. Some of the specific items that were in there were that there would be a creation of an interdepartmental team that would implement the health and all policies work and oversee training, et cetera, for city government. And this team is actually going to be being integrated into the strategic plan and existing structure. We also included in there the use of health equity impact tools to assess policy decisions kind of in real time. And so as part of the workshop, we are actually using a draft tool that city leaders will go through case studies to utilize the tool to actually analyze relevant policies in the city around health and social equity. There's also requirements to create guidelines for community engagement so that as decisions are made across different sectors, whether it's housing, transportation, et cetera, they're effectively engaging community residents. And then there's a requirement for an annual report to summarize both health outcomes, metrics that are included in the strategic plan, and also to report back to City Council and to the city as a whole regarding the overall progress for the health and health policy initiative. As a way to kind of promote it.
So this sounds like something that you can probably get together with him later. He can share the document or some other thing with you.
And some of the resources we use to create.
I noticed you had something similar as a question.
I think it was very
similar. Was there another question in the back? Go ahead.
Yeah, just real quick. Have you had any plans to or conversations to expand this to the statewide policies? And if so, what are the kind of varying challenges between statewide versus city originals? Are they what we think they are?
We good question. Actually, before I joined IPHI, I worked for the State Health Department, and actually that was our goal in our in the Office of Health, Minority Health and Health Equity. And so there's, I think, other challenges, both from the standpoint of political leadership and how supportive they are of public health as a whole, as well as the idea of integrating across different sectors within state government. I think there's various other challenges as well. And we struggled both internally within the health department and across state government of really gaining traction to move the work forward.
Yeah, I think that there's so many different initiatives always being presented to policymakers. There's a lot of fatigue around why should we do something differently every time somebody wants us to. And so I think if this goes well at the city level and we have, you know, a clear process to show how positive results can be replicated on a larger scale, then that's something that we would be happy to push forward after that point was reached. But at this point, I don't think that we're at that conversation yet.